The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started.
Hey, 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 and welcome to the Feminist Book Club podcast, the show that brings you the best of the best feminist content. I'm your host, Neba from Notes by Neba, and today we're getting into books that fit the That Girl aesthetic. That Girl aesthetic is a little bit gendered. It kind of mostly focuses on women, but really it can apply to anyone. So for those of you who don't know, or those of you who need a refresher, according to Refinery29, quote, "That girl isn't just healthy. She's professionally successful and looks her best at every moment. She wakes up every morning at 5:30 a.m. so she can seize the day. Her nails are always uniform, manicured, and eternally chip-free," end quote. If that seems a little unrealistic and hard to go for, it's because it is. It's kind of the epitome of, like, just girl bossing, girl slaying, et cetera, et cetera. Being, quote, that girl, quote, means sort of like to be someone who looks beautiful and healthy, but finds this to be really easygoing throughout your entire life. Oftentimes, that girl online is sort of just this fake and filtered view at someone's life. It's watered down to look really, like, minimalistic and aesthetic. Other times it's the person who has their stuff together and is confident in who they are. But either way, that girl is someone that many people aspire to become. But unfortunately, it can lead to a feeling bad about yourself rather than actually wanting to improve your life. And that's not like anyone's fault or anything, but the sort of comparison that people make when they're looking at themselves versus what they are seeing through their screens, that is where things can get a little bit hazy. And so with this continued rise of social media, the comparisons that people are making between themselves and the people on their screens and their screens, it's just sort of increasing to a worrying degree. One thing I like to do whenever I'm looking at social media is always remind myself that you are looking at someone's highlights reel, and you yourself are experiencing mostly behind the scenes. You're not seeing someone else's behind the scenes. I personally really love an influencer or just person online who is able to kind of show both sides of that and kind of give people a more realistic view of what's going on. Unfortunately, these people tend to not be people who are like rising to the top of every single platform and things like that. But I do think it is something that helps keep this healthier relationship with social media and lets you continue to enjoy it. So, on to books, the real part reason we're all here. First one is called How to Disappear by Sharon Russ. What is it about, even? So there's a person named Vicky. Vicky's social anxiety has kind of helped her to master the art of just like hiding in plain sight. So only her best friend Jenna can see her. But when Jenna moves away, Vicky gets so isolated that she decides to invent an entire social life by photoshopping herself into other people's photos and posting them on Instagram under a different screen name. Instantly, she begins to get followers, and she has made a whole life for herself without ever leaving her bedroom. But the more followers that she gets online, the clearer it becomes that there are a lot of people out there who feel like her, hashtag alone, hashtag ignored. And so to help them and herself, she quite sort of has to stop living vicariously and start actually bringing her social media persona to life. I'll add a little trigger warning for social anxiety and isolation. It is aimed kind of at a teen demographic, but I do think it's still kind of something you can enjoy even if you are an adult. It fits really well because Vicky is kind of this epitome of a person who's invented a fake persona online that helps get her some popularity and notoriety, and she becomes quote-unquote that girl. She meets people who are living the same way as her outside of the screen and apparently just makes her fake photoshopped life her reality. So anyway, that one's a really great one. Moving onwards, we also have and as always, the links for all of these will be in the description. Moving onwards, we have Bombshell by Rowan Manis. This is about In real life, Joss Wyatt is sort of this ordinary teenage girl with a tight-knit group of friends and a potential boyfriend. But online, she's an art restorer in Washington, D.C., a model jet-setting around Europe, a southern beauty queen trapped in a loveless marriage. Online, she just kind of is anyone she wants to be. So she has all these varied sets of alternate lives, and she uses them to escape her boredom that is basically being a teenage girl in a generic suburb. But eventually she starts getting anonymous messages threatening to reveal her identity to everyone she knows, both in real life and in online. And so her carefully constructed worlds just start to unravel. There's a little bit of a trigger warning about stalking and blackmail. Again, this one is also aimed at a teen demographic, but just because something is aimed at a teen demographic does in no way lessen the book. It's sort of this great idea of like this ordinary girl who online has made herself really desirable and successful and isn't exactly what everyone thinks she is. And I think it really highlights the message of how people can be really different than what they appear online, because, you know, your online personality and photos and everything, it's completely manufactured. And in the past, just sort of as a tangent, we had sort of like text, and it's very easy to fake yourself with text, and then we had photos, and then it became really easy to fake photos. And lately, now we have deepfakes, which are these videos that you can kind of create based on just sort of inputting a lot of information, and you can take your image and change it to be almost anyone you want. So people have created deepfakes of celebrities, they've created deepfakes of really famous political people, and as you can imagine, having videos of these people that are so hard to distinguish from reality, doing and saying things that that person actually did it never, like never actually did, can be quite problematic. Technology has always been moving faster than society can keep up, and even faster than politics and laws can keep up. So I constantly urge you to think about what is best for yourself and how exactly you can translate that to technology as well. Moving on, we also have the confidence code for girls, taking risks, messing up, and becoming your amazingly imperfect, totally powerful self by Caddy Kate and Claire Shipman. This one is full of graphic novel strips and illustrations and quizzes and challenges and a bunch of stories. So it's sort of this smorgasbord of everything. It teaches girls to embrace risk and deal with failure, and it's sort of this paradox familiar to a lot of parents where girls are achieving like never before and yet at the same time consumed with doubt on the inside. I personally think women have a lot more imposter syndrome than men in general. And when I say women and men, I generally just mean women and women presenting folks, and men meaning men and men presenting folks. Women generally just worry constantly about how they look, what people think, whether to try out for a sports team or school play, why aren't they getting perfect grades, why aren't they looking perfect, how many likes and follows you have online. And so these authors use this mixture of science and research. They're mixing behavioral science and they're mixing the research that they've found. Overall, just a really great book for the person in your life, person at yourself. It's aimed at a bit of a younger demographic, but still could be an excellent idea for people. And also, I love that it's kind of more interactive. So you have like little quizzes and challenges and things like that that you can actually do rather than just kind of sit and read. Second to last, we also have Bloom, A Journey to Self-Love by Brittany. I'm going to try my best with this name. Traverse. Bloom is sort of a one woman's restorative quest towards love of the internal sort. Though through Bare Bones poems, there's essays, there's some meditations, it will be pretty kind of like a healing book. It's sort of this act of utter vulnerability, and Bloom is really just about becoming the best self you can be, sort of like being through this workshop, really, like workbook, I guess. You can be, quote, that girl when you see the confidence to see yourself as being able to become that girl. No trigger warnings in this one either. This one is meant for kind of anyone in any age demographic, and having like kind of a workbooky type thing, I personally think is really great for actually being able to get to that girl aesthetic. Another quick side note, there's a lot of TikTok accounts that kind of promote the that girl aesthetic, and they're always inevitably a very rich, white, cis, healthy female. And that, of course, is not how most of the planet's people are. But I did recently find a really interesting set of videos that were tagged with that girl aesthetic, and it was called That Girl Aesthetic on a Realistic Budget and from a Realistic Person, or something along those lines. And it followed this person who didn't have this whole like minimalistic, beautiful aesthetic setup, but at the same time was sort of doing, you know, everything she could to be her best. You see her waking up early in the morning at 6 a.m., preparing herself a healthy meal. It doesn't look, you know, perfectly plated the way that some of those videos did, but at the same time, it still looks really good. And you can see that she's doing a really great job. And anyway, that's the kind of content that I feel like is a lot more wholesome and realistic and makes me feel happy that, like, oh, this person's really able to do it for themselves. Maybe I can do it too. Anyway, much more inspiring than looking at some of these like really small minimalistic photos. And last, we have Beyond Beautiful, a practical guide to being happy, confident, and you in a looks-obsessed world by Anshika Rees. It's a book that's filled with kind of like strategies for proactive self-care. So there's a lot of questions and answers to tricky questions like, why do I hate the way I look in pictures? How can I stop feeling like a total slob compared to everyone on social media? How exactly does this whole self-love thing even work? How do I find the confidence to use less makeup or stop shaving or wear what I want? Is body positivity really the answer? One thing I really liked about this was that there were illustrations with full color artwork everywhere, which is always just a very nice visual treat. So it was just a much needed, like, just sort of breath of fresh air that helps you kind of live your best life and know your worth and stop wasting any precious energy or mental space worrying about things like the way you look. It's really kind of meant to empower you to have confidence within yourself. The only trigger warning for this one will be self-image issues, but really, this is sort of a book that helps you kind of move past them. And I hope that if any of you guys try out any of these books, please feel free to let us know over here at Feminist Book Club. You can find us online on any major platform, and you can find me online at pretty much any major platform, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. Feel free to shoot me a DM if you like this episode, if there was anything you don't like, books that you wanted to add, topics that you wanted to have covered. And with that, Happy New Year, everyone, and I will see you on the next page.
Greetings, friends. I'm Marquita Guerrera, and I thought I'd spend a little time today talking to you about The Appeal, the new book by Janice Hallett, published January 25th by Atria Books. The Appeal is an epistolary mystery. That is fun to say. It's an epistolary mystery based around a medical event and the circumstances that result from that. A point of clarification here. I am American, rather obviously, I'm sure, and bring an American lens to this book, which is situated in a small town in the UK. That's pertinent here because the book is framed within a court case, and so I continually forgot, despite many mentions, that this book is not about an appeal from a judgment. It is that too, sort of. But the title seems more to do with the fundraising appeal for the medical costs, which itself seems an awfully American situation as well, though we wouldn't call it an appeal, I don't think. If we do, I'm not from the region that does. In any event, I might be confusing things here. Let me try to lay it out. The appeal starts off with a senior partner at a law firm directing court materials be given to a couple junior associates for their review, with the hope that they would naturally come to the same conclusion he has about who is wrongly incarcerated and what actually transpired that led to a murder. There are a couple of text message exchanges between the two junior associates, and then we jump right into the materials, beginning with a letter of recommendation, immediately followed by correspondence, which remains almost entirely carried out via email for the rest of the book. This is maybe the most contrived aspect of the story. I don't know that many people who communicate casually via email anymore, and certainly not among people who are peers and family. If Hallett had tried to conduct the whole novel via text, however, it would have been absolutely maddening and impossible to follow, so the reader must forgive her this. And you do pretty much stop noticing it. We follow the narrative to find that Poppy, the 2-year-old grandchild of the theater owner, has been diagnosed with a rare but aggressive form of cancer, and her prognosis is poor. The family has heard about an experimental drug, however, that is available in the U.S., but hasn't passed the testing provided by the NHS yet, and so is not on offer in their home country. They start fundraising, the titular appeal, to purchase the medication outright and try to save Poppy. The whole community rallies around the family, offering their services and raising money in events large and small. It becomes clear fairly quickly that there is something amiss. The normal miscommunications become embellished and, by being passed along from person to person, converted to fact. Apart from that, though, there are inconsistencies in the messaging from and behaviors of the family. It takes until around page 300, and this book is over 400 pages long, by the way, before the mystery takes a fatal turn. But I honestly didn't mind it. I was carried along by the story and the investment I had in the characters. The final 100-plus pages of the book are dedicated then to what would be considered more classic mystery elements. Who is the murderer and why did they do it? What is truth and what is fabrication? That kind of thing. The challenge with an epistolary novel is to not be too expository, but to provide enough shading around events so that the reader is able to infer what happens off the page. For the most part, Hallett is successful at this, though, as previously stated, you must suspend your disbelief that people will just email their random thoughts throughout the day to their friends, spouses, family. There are places where it's a bit overwrought, but it wasn't irksome, at least not to me. I don't look for high literature when I'm reading a mystery. That's not what I'm looking to get out of it. I want to disappear for a little bit into something captivating and engaging, and you get that with the appeal. Strangely enough, the final 100 pages, the part where the book transitions to a stereotypical mystery, kind of drags. I would have been absolutely happy if the book didn't include a murder. There are enough elements of mystery and deception around Poppy's appeal. The book could have hinged on that, and the murder sort of takes away from it a bit. Not as much that I wouldn't recommend this title. I absolutely do, especially if you, like me, really enjoy the epistolary form. If you listened to my recent episode celebrating Latinx short stories, you know that I have less time in my day to devote to longer novels. But this was still a joy to read, and I kept sneaking back to it between tasks and before bed when I was indulging in revenge bedtime procrastination. We all do that, right? I mean, yes, we all do that. I really ought to try to sleep more. I found myself dog-earing the pages of the book where the cast of characters and their relationship to one another was explicitly written out so I could refer back to that. This is a huge ensemble cast. One dog and 82 people in total, more or less. You'll understand why I phrase it that way when you read the book. You probably wouldn't have to do this if each of the characters had a rich backstory, but that's not the function of an epistolary novel. This is plot-driven, not character-driven, and so the reader benefits tremendously by this little piece of reference. I felt like it would have been lovely to have little flags throughout the book to refer back to pieces of correspondence or evidence later, to see where they connected with future developments, but I simply did not have the ability to do that. And it didn't detract at all. If you're the kind of reader that really immerses yourself in a book, the appeal will give you the opportunity to do that and reward you for it. If, however, you just want to kind of forget about all the chaos that's going on in the world that you might have noticed, maybe, and you want to sink into a story, you'll get that too. There's no other work required. I'm going on a bit now, but it is in the spirit of recommending this book. Picking up a 400-plus page book can seem daunting, but it goes so quickly and is worth the time. I know we're all in need of a little escapism right now. If your form of escape looks like a contemporary British mystery, please check out The Appeal by Janice Hallett. Link in show notes, of course, because I want to do what I can to make this world just a little tiny bit easier for you. If you have a book that you want to recommend, you can find me on Instagram at @O_Murray. Until next time, friends, stay well. Be kind to yourselves. Be kind to one another. I'll be back soon.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
A well-read woman is a dangerous creature.